Thank you, and good morning, and thanks for the invitation to come and speak this today. So as Hill had mentioned, I'm going to be talking about chlamydia screening in England and looking at coverage. And I think it's important just to highlight, following on from our previous speakers, that what we mean by coverage, screening coverage in England, does vary. When we use the term coverage in England, we mean at the population level in terms of the proportion of the population who've received a chlamydia test. But I'll go into more detail on this throughout the talk. And I'm presenting today on behalf of my colleague Gwenda Hughes and also the HIV and STI department. So in terms of the outline, in doing this talk, I'm going to give an overview of chlamydia screening and how it works within England. And then I'm going to run through our data sources and tell you about how we do measurement of various different indicators relating to the delivery of chlamydia screening in England. And I'll provide you with some of our recent data to illustrate those methods. And then talk a little bit about the use of our information for local action, which we think is a really important part of what we do. So by way of background then, chlamydia screening in England, the National Chlamydia Screening Programme, or the NCSP, in England was established in 2003, and was rolled out on a phased basis, and by 2008, all areas of England were participating in chlamydia screening. The programme recommends that sexually active under 25-year-old men and women are screened annually and on change of sexual partner. And we also recommend that those who test positive take a retest around 3 months after their diagnosis. Chlamydia tests are offered opportunistically in a range of clinical and non-clinical venues, and this includes in general practice, in contraceptive clinics, and in STD clinics, as well as other venues such as educational venues and other outreach settings. The aim of the programme is to prevent and control chlamydia through early detection and treatment of asymptomatic infections, and thereby reducing onward transmission to sexual partners, reducing the consequences of untreated infections, and to raise the awareness and skills of health professionals in order to screen for chlamydia and provide the information that young people need to reduce the risk of infection and transmission. So how do we monitor the delivery of chlamydia screening? Well, Public Health England recommends that local areas should be working towards achieving a diagnosis rate of at least 2,300 chlamydia diagnoses per 100,000 15 to 24-year-olds, and that's the target age group for screening. And I think it's important to mention at this stage that we consider that diagnosis rate indicator as a measure of screening program performance rather than as a burden of infection. So we emphasize that areas should be trying to diagnose as many of infections as possible in order to remove those infections from the pool of prevalent infection and increase our chances of reducing transmission and sequelae. However, other standards and measures of chlamydia screening are also used, and we provide routine data on these measures. These include chlamydia screening coverage, positivity, measures of partner notification and retesting rates. We also have a program of audits, so looking at measures around rates of turnaround times in terms of time from a test to receiving results and time to treatment. But I'm going to focus today on the measures indicated on the slide. We have great data sources, I think, in England in order to look at these data. We have information both from our STD clinics and from community testing venues. So I'm going to run through these data sources and give you a bit of a background to what we collect and how we can use them. So from our STD clinics, we have a data set called the Genitourinary Medicine Clinical Activity Dataset, or GUMCAD for short. This is a provider-based reporting system. It's disaggregate and includes information on STD clinic activity among all ages. This data set has been in place since 2009 and replaced an aggregate reporting system that had been in place from our STD clinics from several decades before that. Information on chlamydia testing done outside of STD clinics is largely collected through the Chlamydia Testing Activity Dataset, or CTAD. This is, instead of a provider-based reporting, this is laboratory-based reporting. It's a disaggregate system and, again, collects information from all ages. And this information, this system, is available from 2012 onwards. And, again, this reported a previous system, which had been a provider-based reporting system, but we moved to lab-based reporting for chlamydia testing in order to increase the sustainability of our services in a changing context of chlamydia screening. the two different systems collect slightly different information. So this is just a summary, not in great detail, but a summary of the kind of information we have within these data sets. In our STD clinic data, we have information on age, gender, location of residence, and ethnicity, and we have that in our community data as well. In the, we have sexual orientation within our STD clinics, but not from the community testing data. In terms of unique identifiers, this is done slightly different in the different systems. In our STD clinics, every patient attending has a unique identifier within that particular service, so you can identify individuals coming back repeatedly within that particular clinic. Within our community testing data, although we do collect a unique identifier, the NHS number, which is the medical records number that's unique to an individual in the UK, it's not 100% reporting. So instead, we use a combination of date of birth, gender, and postcode or zip code as a proxy for a unique identifier and for following people through that system. As you can imagine, the data from the STD clinics is much more comprehensive in terms of what information is collected because it's designed as a whole system to collect information across the clinic. And this includes information on services, so both chlamydia tests and tests for other STIs and HIV. It has information on contraception provided and vaccinations. And also in terms of clinical data, we have information on all diagnoses made in terms of STIs and HIV within STD clinics. The community testing data is a specific chlamydia data set, so has information on chlamydia tests and diagnoses. Neither of the systems have information on symptoms, but our STD clinic information does have information on whether somebody attended as a contact, but that's not available through the community data. So with these two systems together, we have a full, what we consider to be a full picture of all publicly funded chlamydia testing and diagnoses across the both genders and all ages. There is some degree of overlap between these systems, as we know that in some cases people who are tested in the community might be referred into STD clinics for further management and additional treatment and management. But we are able to deduplicate our data in order to get as accurate a picture of what's going on in our services. And in the 2012, around 9,000 duplicate diagnoses were removed, which represents about 9% of the community tests being referred from community into STD clinics. Another step in our kind of use of these data and ensuring that they're as accurate as possible is to create testing and diagnosis episodes. So we deduplicate our data so that only one test or diagnosis is allowed within a six-week period. So just to illustrate how we do this, this is a timeline showing the number of weeks. And so if you imagine that somebody arrived, came for a chlamydia test or diagnosis in week one, and they also there on week five and week 11. In our cleaning algorithms, we get rid of that test at week five because we consider that to be part of the same testing episode. But the test at 11 weeks is considered a separate testing episode and remains in the data set. In terms of these indicators, then, and how we actually measure these, the diagnosis rate is number of chlamydia diagnoses divided by the total population, not limited to the sexually active population. For these indicators, we use the total population based on census data. Coverage is the proportion of chlamydia tests over the total population. And again, it's important to identify that this is tests, not individuals. And our positivity is number of diagnoses over number of tests. So in the last year, well, in 2012, our most recently available data, just as a bit of a flavour of some of our data outputs, the diagnosis rate in 15 to 24-year-old men was 1,177 per 100,000. In women, it was higher at 2,290. The coverage was estimated at 16% in men and 35% in women. And the positivity was around 8.5% in men and 7.3% in women. And that, again, I think hides quite a bit of variation according to clinic type, because this is taking all of those testing venues and looking at the overall positivity. Another part of our indicators and the measurement that we provide and the information we provide back to local services is around retesting rates. So in 2012 to 2013, we had a consultation in the UK, in England, sorry, and the NCST, following this consultation, updated our recommendations for case management to include a routine offer of a retest around 3 months after treatment. I know that that's been in place in several other countries for some time, but our recommendation was only in place last year. We've recently developed a new reporting indicator to monitor these retesting rates at 7 to 14 weeks after a positive test. So just quickly going back to our slide on this, and just the showing the retesting rates and how we measure these. So again, somebody's had that first diagnosis taken out at 5 weeks, but we look in that 7 to 14 week window, and if somebody has a test after that diagnosis in that period, then they count towards retesting. I think I'm running out of time, so I'm going to go through these fairly quickly. So this just shows some of our outputs in terms of retesting data at 7 to 14 weeks among 15 to 24 year olds. And the figures on the right-hand side show our data from individual local areas, so these are local government areas, in community settings and STD clinics. And at baseline, before the kind of full introduction of the recommendation, there was a fair amount of variation in that, and we see that about 15% of local areas had retesting rates of over 20%. So we hope that that will go up, and we'll continue to monitor that. Partner notification. We've heard, I think, during this conference that both doing partner notification and measuring that is notoriously challenging. We have coding in our STD clinics, as mentioned, that allows us to identify people who've attended as contacts, and we can also look at the proportion of those who are positive once they've been tested. So in 2012, for every one new chlamydia diagnosis in an STD clinic, there were 0.54 visits in individuals who had attended as a contact with someone with chlamydia. And 37% of these contacts were diagnosed, again, in showing the kind of efficiency of partner notification, the importance of this procedure in terms of picking up and diagnosing infections. Finally, then, just to mention in terms of how we use the data, I think we think it's really, really important that we provide this data back to our local areas on a regular basis, and we provide we do this in a number of different ways. This is just a screenshot from our sexual and reproductive health profiles, which includes information on chlamydia diagnosis rates and several other sexual and reproductive health-related indicators, and this information is available at our local area. It allows mapping and benchmarking across the different areas so people can see where they fit and monitor their performance accordingly within their local structures. So we do have some limitations in terms of these data sets, although we think they're great in terms of being a complete data set. There is some limitation. They don't capture private chlamydia testing activity, although in England we believe that this is going to be a minority of the tests, quite a small minority of the tests going on. Some of the partner notification monitoring is incomplete, as it only allows us to measure within STD clinics and not capture fully information going on in the community. We have some, because we don't have complete unique identifiers, our ability to measure retesting over a long period or to look at linkage with to outcomes for sequelae is limited. And we have limited data on sexual behaviour in these data sets. In terms of next steps, we aim to continually evolve and develop and improve our data. The chlamydia testing activity data set is a fairly new data set and requires some continuous improvement in terms of data quality, and we're working on that. And also an important next step for using these data more effectively is sexual behaviour monitoring that is now being put in place through GUMCAD version 3, which is currently a sexual behaviour monitoring in a pilot stage. And my colleague Hamish Mohammed has a poster on this if you'd like to learn more. And this will also improve our partner notification measurement. So I'd just like to thank all the services who contribute to these data sets and the department and my co-authors for their contributions. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sarah. So we had at least one question a few minutes ago, and Stu had to sit back now, so I'm sure he's chomping at the bit. But David, Sarah, could you guys come back up here, if you don't mind? And we'll run through, because we've got about 10 minutes, I think.
The question I had was on that. Your hypothesis had been, Sarah, that there would be assuming you have clinic prevalence was exactly the same over all your clinics, that just by virtue of who you selected, you would produce some variability. And it was a little surprising that there was no correlation between coverage and positivity. But on the other hand, if it was really random, you would see less variability among those clinics that had sort of 100% coverage and more variability among those that had less coverage, but the line would be flat. So you would see no correlation, actually. But the question is that what you're seeing? Is there more variability on the lower in terms of positivity among the lower coverage clinics versus the higher coverage clinics?
Well, I mean, I'd love to share the graphs with you and have you take a look at them, too. I didn't see any sort of funnel shape to the graph, so I didn't really... I thought that I might see that, and I didn't. I still think, there's kind of a flaw in... or not necessarily a flaw, but trying to look for consistent patterns across the board, across all clinics, is limited in terms of telling us what's really going on. There could be multiple factors at play at the same time that are sort of washing each other out. I was just kind of surprised that when I looked at those graphs, there was just no pattern at all.
We also didn't have a lot.
David points out, we only had 58 clinics, which was a limitation of, as I said, trying to merge between two data sets that have some administrative reporting challenges and differences in funding streams. So a lot of times clinics don't have compatible data.
So I don't see anyone else standing up, so I'm going to ask a question. Sarah Woodall, I'm curious about the fact that you listed as a limitation the fact that, you have a little uncertainty about the private sector chlamydia screening. Of course, that's a much bigger limitation for us in this country. So I'm just curious about what you think of proportional, private sector chlamydia testing compared to this NHS overall.
Okay, so I'm not able to put an exact number on that. I think that the way that the healthcare systems work is so different between the UK and the US in that we believe that the majority, because the chlamydia tests that are available are free at the point of care, that there are no restrictions in terms of who can access those tests within that age group. And so we know that there is some private testing going on, but we don't have any, the actual information on that, but we do believe it's going to be a minority of the activity. And I would hazard a guess as to the percentage. Am I allowed to say less than 5%? Yeah, smaller, possibly. Under 5%, if even that, I would think. And in terms of that, we know that there are some kind of internet testing providers who do provide private services, but again, it's probably vanishingly small.
I got a question for Sarah also. I'm wondering about the people who come in because their partner told them to come in. I wonder, first of all, how valid you think that is. And second, do you think you could use that to see what percent of partners, what percent of patients actually get their partners to come in for treatment?
Yeah, so I think the coding that was introduced, so this is a relatively new code within our data system that is able to indicate when somebody does come to an STD clinic, whether they have indicated that they've come as a contact. So I think that if somebody has got that measure, I think it's pretty certain that they will be a contact. It's feasible, I think, that we'll probably be missing some contacts in terms of people who have attended and don't necessarily tell their clinician or don't tell the clinic that they have attended, that they've known that there's been a partner who's had a diagnosis. And so that the systems by which partner notification is monitored in terms of pathways and things coming through into the system is quite, I think, does vary in different areas, but relies on patient self-report, I think, within the STD clinics. So we can use that as an indicator to some extent of the proportion of people who get their partner tested. And so the index that I mentioned, the ratio that we have in there, which was, I think, about 0.5, is an indication of that. But because we don't have information from our community testing venues, it's feasible that people who are tested in the community and then the partners go to an STD clinic, that that ratio might be an overrepresentation of the proportion of people who get their partners tested. And similarly, there might be some direction of travel in the other direction, which means that we might be underrepresenting. So it is a proxy, and it's not perfect, but that's something we're trying to improve. And hopefully through the enhanced monitoring within the next phase of the GUMCAD system, that will hopefully improve our understanding of those markers.
Okay, I don't see any additional questions, so I think that's going to conclude this session. Thanks very much for coming. All right.